First of all, I want to thank Rabbi Blau and Rabbi Chaifetz and Ari Tuchman. Is Ari? Is he here? No. In absentia. He is there? No. In absentia. And welcome all of you to the Dorm Talks 1996. I do not recall if I treated this theme in any way earlier at a Dorm Talk or another student forum recently. So if I didn't, you'll hear it for the first time. And if I did, not terrible to hear it again. Before we go into the details of relations between Jews and non-Jews from a Torah perspective, before we go into the details, we have to know certain general principles. I think the best way to express the general principle is by looking at the Aleinu. Have I talked about that here before? The Aleinu, you have two parts, at least the way we have it today. At the end of every tefillah, you have Aleinu l'shabeach and Alkein akaveh. If you examine them carefully, and it's worth doing it, you will discover something very interesting. That the first part, the Aleinu, is strongly national, ethnocentric, or to use the more appropriate word, particularistic. It speaks of Jews, and the reference to non-Jews generally is unfriendly. We have a different destiny from them, and then in the original, pray to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's a inward-looking tefillah. When you come to Alkein Nekaveh, there we suddenly spread out. And instead of being particularistic, it is universalistic. We speak about all the world coming together to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of everyone cooperating in Tikkun HaOlam B'Malchus Shaddai, creating a new world. I didn't know it was so funny. Creating a Malchus Shamayim together with all peoples who recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu and acknowledge his lordship, his sovereignty over the world. That's a broad view. So you have a narrow, particularistic view, and you have a broad view. Which one expresses real Yiddishkeit? No? Which one expresses real Yiddishkeit? The answer is neither one alone does. Both together do. Both together do. And that very paradox, it's not really a paradox, but that meeting, that encounter of two different views together give you an understanding of what Yiddishkeit is all about. It really goes back to the first commission delegated or assigned Am Yisrael at Har Sinai. At Har Sinai, we were told that we're going to be segula mikol ha'amim, and we're going to be a what? What we're going to be? The assembly mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. Think about that. Normally, when you read it or you learn it, you go through quickly. Mamleches kohanim v'goy. Good Jewish words there. Nice words there. You know, of course you approve of them. Questions: what do they mean, and how do they differ? Take mamleches kohanim. What is kohuna? What is the function of a Kohen? Just to take advantage of getting the first Aliyah? No. A Kohen really is someone who teaches. Yechezkel puts it, Ves Ami, speaking about the Kohanim, he says, Ves Ami Yoru ben Kodesh Lechol uben Tome Letahor Yodiyum. A Kohen is supposed to teach people to distinguish between Kodesh and Chol, between Tome and Tahor. Therefore, the Kohen is really a teacher. That means that Am Yisrael was created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be a priest, Kohen, teacher to all of mankind. That implies a relationship with mankind. You can't be a teacher if you don't have relationships, although I've heard that every now and then you have such people. But basically, a real teacher is someone who establishes very profound and intimate relationships with his students. There is a meeting of intellects, a meeting of minds, and at the highest level, it's not only a meeting of minds, but a meeting of hearts and spirit. So to be a priest teacher to be as Ami Yoru, to be a Mamleches Kohanim, means that Am Yisrael as such must have relationships with the world and bring to them a message. That message doesn't have to be didactic. It doesn't have to be certainly pedantic. It doesn't mean we have to set up shop at every corner and pull over every guy we see and say, I want to teach you how to be a real mensch. It means that you teach primarily by example. And that is why the concepts of Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem are so important. Because if you're Mechal Hashem Shemayim, if you do something that's degrading and disgusting and that reflects poorly on your on what you... It is something that reflects poorly on you. It therefore reflects poorly on what you believe in. And you abdicate your function of being a Mamleches Kohanim. How are you going to teach anybody anything if you're acting like a terrible person? So that is one aspect. This really is equivalent to the Alkei Nekaveh, right? It's universalistic. Then the other one is Goy Kadosh. What does to be Kadosh mean? What does it mean to be holy? Does it mean to mingle? No. What does the Sifra say on the Pasuk Kadoshim Tihiyu? It's coming up, it's coming Shabbos. Prushim Tihiyu. And Prushim means Muvdolim, to be separate. Kedusha requires turning inwards. It's not a centripetal motion, to use the terms from physics. It's a centrifugal motion. It's a centripetal motion. You go back within. To go closer to a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the sense of Kedusha requires being with yourself and of yourself and of like-minded people perhaps, but it's primarily separating yourself from the mass of humanity, not in a way that will be derogatory to them necessarily, but that will pay attention to your own spiritual gestalt, your own spiritual development. That's more akin to Alkei Nekaveh. So you have the same paradox. At the very moment that Am Yisrael was created, at the cradle of Klal Yisrael, we were given two missions, a particularistic one and a universalistic one. One without the other doesn't work. If you have only a universalistic mission, then you become a goy kechol hagoyim. And we've seen that in Jewish history. Nah, we see that now in Jewish history. You see it now in America, you see it in Israel. We can go into greater details later. I don't want to become pejorative so early in the evening. And then if you have only the particularistic and you abandon the universalistic, you can be a Jew, but you're no longer a historic people. You're a sect, a cult. You're only involved with yourself. You have no message that you bear for all of mankind. And in order to be a Mamleches Kohanim, to be a mamlacha, you've got to be Kohanim first. So you have to have both together in order to get the fullness and the richness of these broad horizons that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wished upon us at Har Sinai. So you have, again, one and the other. Now this comes in to the concept. Well, let me ask you another question. What are our responsibilities to general society? I started the first question. How should we view our roles in the non-Jewish world? Our roles in the non-Jewish world should be we are no less human beings than non-Jews. And if non-Jews have a responsibility to be active in the world, so do we. The fact that we're Jews doesn't mean we're less than human. If anything, it should mean that we're more than human. I mean, we're human to the fullest extent. And if society as such faces a problem, we are honor-bound to participate in the solution to that problem, because otherwise we too will be affected. Besides that, they are fellow human beings. Which leads me to the second. That is our responsibilities of the general society. That's what I was focusing on. What are our responsibilities? Do we have any special responsibilities? Of course we do. It's a halacha. Mefanes aniyei Yisrael emaniyei Yakum. And you have to not only be mefanes them, you have to save them, you have to help them. These are halachas. You have to be kovim meisehem. The Rambam adds, you have to be menachem them when they are availim. So don't ask a shot, am I allowed to go to visit my friend who is non-Jewish when his father died or his mother died? Not only are you allowed to, you must. In the same way that you have a mitzvah to go to a Jew, there is a mitzvah to go to a goy, mefarnesen and menachem of aleihem shall akum im Yisrael, the same way you do with Jews. Doesn't mean necessarily it's the same kind of, the same level of mitzvah, different mitzvahs, but there is a mitzvah to help them and to be with them. You express your humanness, and then you express your Jewishness in the special mitzvahs that give you the sense of Kedusha. Of course, if you ask then, where do your primary obligations lie? You have a limited amount of time. What are you going to do with your limited amount of time? Well, you have a Seder Adifut, you have a list of priorities. Priority goes to your own people. If you have a cousin who is very seriously in need, and you have a stranger who is very seriously in need, whom do you go to first? Who should you help first? Your relative. How do I know? Is it because I've decided that independently, or is there any scriptural proof to it? Do you have a pasuk for me, anyone? Any of you are any of you awake when it comes to still? Any of you alert when it comes to leinen on Yom Kippur day? No? Three words. You should not blind your eyes to your own flesh and blood. And where in halacha do you find the same concept repeated in halachic terminology? Yes, in tzedakah. Where? What's the halacha? If you have poor people in your own neighborhood and poor people far away, who comes first? Your own neighborhood. In other words, the halacha in this case accords with the most basic, noble human instincts. Because the people who want to help only the strangers are in many ways the same as people who hate strangers. Xenophobia, the fear of the stranger, to my mind, is not much different from xenophilia, of preferring the stranger. Jews, of course, are the prime example of people who feel closest to strangers rather than to their own. I mean, assimilated Jews, but that's the fact. However, our attitude has to be there is a Seder Adifut. But priority doesn't mean totality. The very fact that protein is more important to you than that the protein of bread and potatoes, carbohydrates and protein, are more important than ice cream and soda doesn't mean that you have to have a bland diet. They need only vitamins. You can just pop vitamins all day. You have to have a varied diet, but your emphasis must be, the priority must be given to that which is most important. The same way it is true with the time that you spend with Am Yisrael and Klal Yisrael and the time you spend as a member of the general society. The next question is a bit trickier. How can we reconcile relationships with non-Jews based on the principles of Eva and Darkei Shalom with the transcendent perspective that all people are created B'Tselem Elohim? Well, let me explain what I believe the author had in mind here. There is a principle in halacha of Darkei Shalom. It's a Gemara, the Mishnah in Gittin talks about it, and the Gemara has several examples of it, that certain things are legislated by the halacha in order to increase Darkei Shalom, peace. Now, this refers not only to questions of Jews and non-Jews, it refers to questions of Jews and Jews. For instance, the halacha is that a Kohen gets which aliyah? Which aliyah does a Kohen get? The first one. Why? It's a halacha, v'kidashto, he comes first. Kardam l'chol davish v'kidusha. So the Kohen comes first. What happens if the Kohen says, I'm very grateful to the Torah, but I'm willing to yield to my friend Chaim, who is not a Levi and not a Yisrael, is not a Kohen, is an ordinary Yisrael. Can he do it originally, according to the original halacha? Can a Kohen be mochel? Of course he can. He can say, look, I don't want to honor me, I'm very grateful, but I don't want to accept the honor. But the Gemara said, no. Mishum Darkei Shalom, he cannot yield on Shabbos and Yontif, when there are many people present. Why not? Because on Shabbos and Yontif, if he will yield to one person, the Chaim, then Yankel will say, what about me? Am I not more as important as he is? So what you do is you create enmity and divisiveness in society. So Darkei Shalom means to avoid divisiveness, to avoid machlokas, to avoid problems and struggles and anger. What you do is follow a certain pattern. This is the way you do it, and do not deviate from it. The same way, Darkei Shalom is a mitzvah of, as I mentioned before, Mefandes Naniyei Yaakov and Imaniyei Yisrael. You have to do so. Why? Mipnei Darkei Shalom. So the understanding is that Darkei Shalom, in this case, of why must you take care of Gentile poor as well as Jewish poor? Because of Darkei Shalom. What does Darkei Shalom mean then, according to this? That you do it for what reason? No? In order to avoid... Hello, anyone awake here? Don't be afraid. All you can do is make a mistake at most. So what does it mean? What is the reason for Mefardes Nani Yaakov Ani Yisrael? Your Mefarnes Mipnei Darkei Shalom. Apparently, in order not to create any strife, any hostility between Jew and non-Jew, take care of them too. That would mean it would appear to be a pragmatic rule, right? Prudential. In order not to create problems, go ahead and give them tzedakah. How about Me'ikar Hadin? Should you do it? It appears from the way the question is phrased that you don't have to. It's only because of Chashash Eva, because of the suspicion that you may incur Eva or hatred and hostility. To avoid hostility and increase Shalom, go ahead and do it. But that's not necessarily so. You know, the Rashi on the halacha of Mefarnes and Aniyeh Akum and Aniyeh Yisrael implies possibly that is so. He says that only when you have two supplicants, one Jewish and one non-Jewish, and you have to help the one who's Jewish, you have to help the one who's non-Jewish too. But if they weren't together, if a Goyim came on their own, you don't have to. That would be one way of reading Rashi. It's a prudential attitude. However, Daran does not read Rashi that way. And the Rashba clearly disagrees with that reading of Rashi, what he thought was Rashi's opinion. On the basis of Yerushalmi, he says, no, you've got to treat everyone with tzedakah. The Rambam even switches. Instead of the usual, what's the usual Torah pasuk? What's the pasuk they usually given as a source for Darkei Shalom? Anyone? Darkeha, Darkei Noam, V'chol Nisivo Seha Shalom. However, here the Rambam says, Kitova Hashem Akol V'rachim Aval Kol Masav. It's not because you want to show peacefulness. It's not what you want because you want to show that Torah is the way of pleasantness. It's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is good and has rachamim, therefore we have to have rachamim too. If it's not prudential, it's rather principled. So you see that Darkei Shalom, according to the Rambam and according to many other Rishonim, Rambam especially, the Rashba, and maybe even Rashi, will hold that Darkei Shalom is a principled action and not merely pragmatic and prudential. So the question here says a transcendent perspective. Indeed, it is a transcendent perspective, according to most Rishonim. How should we interact with them socially? Like gentlemen. That's what I've said all along. Does it mean that you must have many friends amongst them and interact socially? No, you got to be very careful. You got to be very careful for the simple reason that Chazal made it the principle that social and purely social intercourse should be limited. It should be limited because of hischatnus. Because if you have no bounds at all, and you go over too much of the area to the element of universalism, you lose the element of kedusha. What happens? So you not only meet a friend of yours who's male, but you meet a girlfriend, and you be friendly, and then you go out and you date and you get married, and then therefore Chazal goes there. I mean, way back. That because of his chatnas, you don't do certain things. There's pasakum, there's yayin nesach, and so on and so forth. Should we establish meaningful personal relationships with non-Jews? Yes, but that would be third in my list of priorities. Immediately before it, I would say we should establish meaningful personal relations with fellow Jews. And before that, the first principle is we should establish meaningful personal relations with fellow Orthodox Jews. And we don't always have them. Unfortunately, there's a great deal of anger, contempt, mutual distrust amongst Orthodox Jews that require a great deal of work on our part and will require even more so in your generation than in mine. Because as time goes on, divisiveness increases and distrust increases. It's a kind of You know what? From your physics, entropy increases, disorder increases. But nevertheless, to be more direct, yes, meaningful personal relations depends on the non-Jew. There are Jews whom I would not counsel you to establish meaningful personal relations with. They're just not the decent kind of people. And there are goyim from whom you can learn a great deal and you have it. But again, everything with a limit, remembering that you should never go beyond the point at which you lose your cohesiveness with your own people. But remember at all times, and this I must emphasize, the principle of Tzelem Elokim. The principle of Tzelem Elokim. Every human being is created with Tzelem Elokim. It's what in technical language is called a proprium. It is an inherent property or quality of human beings according to the Torah. Adam HaRishon was not Jewish. He was universal man. Adam HaRishon was created by Tzelem Elokim. Chava was created by Tzelem Elokim. All of us are created by Tzelem Elokim. Man or woman, Jew or non-Jew, free or slave, all of us are Tzelem Elokim. Sometimes the way we act, we pervert the Tzelem Elokim. We sully it, we dirty it, we soil it. And we have a lot to do to create something better out of it. But the basic humanity, the basic value, the basic worthiness of a human being that makes us separate from an animal is that we have a Tzelem Elokim. And that is why Rabbi Akiva said in Pirkei Avos, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem. Man was created B'Tzelem, and that special proprium, that special core of value makes all human beings worthy of respect and protection. Am Yisrael has something special. In addition to that, Chaviv and Yisrael, Shenita Mehem Klei Chemda. They have a Torah. We're a Torah people. As people of Torah, we have something very special. It does not deny the fact, however, that Goyim too are created by Tzelem Elokim. And that thought must always be uppermost in your mind. And to me, that is one of the great ikarim. I mean, we could talk about the meaning of Tzelem Elokim for another hour. And perhaps it's worth devoting some time to the various interpretations of Tzelem Elokim and the various consequences of the concept. But clearly it is there. Does it matter whether we live in an anti-Semitic society or not? I don't quite understand the question. It matters a great deal whether you live in an anti-Semitic society or not. But unless someone can elaborate on the question, I'm not quite sure what it means. I assume it means that if you live in an anti-Semitic society, should you become very friendly with them? I don't normally encourage becoming very friendly with anti-Semites. In fact, I don't encourage them. Anyway, I won't go into it in detail. I think you understand exactly what I mean. Should we teach the Sheva Mitzvahs to non-Jews? Why not? Why not? We should not force them to listen. But there's no reason we should refrain from telling them about the Sheva Mitzvahs. But again, priorities. It's more important to teach the Taryag Mitzvahs to Jews than the Sheva Mitzvahs to non-Jews. I dare say, and I hope I'm not talking out of turn, that a higher percentage of Goyim, at least in this country, are aware of the Sheva Mitzvahs, whether consciously or functionally, than there are Jews who are aware of the Tayag Mitzvahs. And our main task ought to be directed at the Tayag Mitzvahs to Jews, even though it does not necessarily mean to neglect the Sheva Mitzvahs to non-Jews. Abba, you want to have questions on this now? Okay. Just to remind you that try to keep to one question, and it will give an opportunity for as many people as possible to ask and to participate. David? Yeah, I think it's part of being a member of society. Simply what we started off with. You are a part of society. You're a human being like all human beings, not less of a human being, hopefully more. And therefore, you should certainly participate. If you feel that it's of any importance. Unless you want to become a professional politician, in which case it's parnosa, you know. But forgetting about, and sometimes a good one. But forgetting about that, but speaking about the rest of us, less mortal human beings who are ordinary citizens, should we be involved? Yeah, when we think someone is very dangerous, we should go out and try to beat him. We think someone is very good and very decent and moral, has high principles, and we should support him. So I have no, don't even understand why there should be a question, by all means.
Devin.
If you think it's racist, you should disagree. But I don't understand why. There are a lot of things that rabbis in this community can say that you don't have to agree with necessarily. I'm speaking about matters that are not necessarily part of Torah, but are part of the... Look, if you want to be a member of the general society, that means you have to enter the maelstrom of opinions. And there are many opinions, conflicting ideas out there. There's no one idea that has an OU on it. There are many ideas. You have to use your own mind and judgment to say this is good, this is kosher, and this is not kosher. This is glatt kosher, this is glatt treif, right? So if you have an opinion of this sort and you think that it's racist, as you obviously do, then you should feel free to say, I hold that this is a racist point of view. I disagree with it. If you hold that another opinion by the same rabbi is okay, you say, this is a good idea. I support you on it. I don't know anyone who is such a person that I approve of everything that he says or disapprove of everything that he says. In fact, there are some people with whose public views I disagree on almost every point, and I regard them as incredibly wonderful people. So you can disagree with it. Why not? As to whether I agree or disagree, I have never been a proponent of apartheid. I don't think it's the correct idea, but so what? I mean, anyone else has the opinion to disagree. Is it racist? You know, I don't want to be overly politically correct. You can have a view about the segregation of races and still not be a racist when you consider that there are many people, many members of minority groups that propound the same principle. So are they being racist? Maybe the whole world's being racist. But... I would not try to judge a theory by labels. It's too easy. It's too easy. Life is awfully complex, and I think people deserve a hearing. You can disagree with it, but first think about it. Yeah. Why would Mehera imply that? No. Now, I don't know if Mehera always means Yemos HaMashiach. Is it true that Yemos HaMashiach has a strong universalistic component? Sure. It also has a very strong nationalistic component. If you don't believe me, ask the Gush Emunim. I mean, or ask the Lubavitcher. I mean, it has a strong nationalistic, a very strong universalistic component. But I would not use the concept of Mashiach to differentiate between one and the other. Just as the universalistic aspirations of Yahadus will find their fulfillment in the days of Mashiach, so the Kedusha aspirations of Mashiach will find their fullness in the times of Mashiach. See? Well, the guidelines that I think I either stated or implied, that your first obligation lies to your own people. Your first obligation lies to Talmud Torah. Your first obligation lies to be Shmiras HaMitzvahs and to help your own and to be a good Jew. But not very far down, it means to be a member of society. Listen, your friend John McGregor, who lives two blocks from you, also has obligation to general society. It doesn't mean he spends all his day being a general member of society. He goes to church, he has a business, he fights with his wife, he argues with his mother-in-law, he likes his brother. I mean, life goes on, you know, and you spend part of your time doing things that a good citizen does. A Jew should be no different, except that you should do it more honorably than perhaps others do, and more nobly and with greater sensitivity, but that's your obligation. I mean, it's hard to say, it's hard to give you guidelines except to say anything you're going to spend too much time on is no good. Whether it's going to be baseball or basketball or soccer or going out on a boat or whatever, anything else. Everything has to be measured. You're starting out in life. Once you leave school, you'll have a lot of options open in front of you and a lot of pressures. You better make up your mind, milchatchila, how much time you're going to divide, more or less, without being a yucky about it, but more or less how much time you're going to spend on your various activities. And Talmud Torah should be very close to the top. And being a member of society is also there, depending on your inclinations. Not everyone has the inclinations. Some people are very motivated in favor of protection of the ecology. Good, go ahead and do it, especially because you have a lot of Torah warrant for it. Other people are more interested in space and fear of the nuclear bomb, and other people are motivated in other areas for the needy and the hunger. Fine. Being a good Republican, which is the way of Torah, or being a good Democrat, which is the way of Torah, or being good nothing, which is the way. Well, you can go into any area you want, but you know, everything measured, not to pull anything out of context. It's like life is like a symphony. You have a lot of strands, a lot of notes, a lot of musical notes. If one goes too loud at the expense of others, you don't have any symphony anymore. So you've got to make up your mind, milachatzila, how you're going to do it, depending to a large extent on your talent, on your aspirations, on your interests, and your abilities. Yeah, I think it's an issue. I don't think it's a cardinal issue of our lives. I think it's more or less to be expected that the more insular you are, the less social and cultural intercourse you have with your neighbors, the more you're suspicious of them, and the more you feel superior to them, and the more you feel inferior to them. This is a very normal reaction. To a certain extent, it's going to be inevitable. As long as you have a particularistic element, it's going to be there. If you balance it with the universalistic element, you can take the sharp edge off it, and you become much more realistic and much less xenophobic. But of course it's there, and we should not hesitate to say on this, and sometimes it's overdone dreadfully. I'm very annoyed. In fact, the last poll of a commentator about racism, I was both happy and unhappy. I was happy that the rate of racism was relatively low, and I was unhappy that it was there altogether. I think that Ben Torah should not have that kind of point of view. And we should be very careful in the language we use, even in humor. We should not necessarily have imitatio Marlon Brando. What's his name? Brando, yeah. I mean, you don't have to call every Jew with the K word, and every black man with the N word, and every Italian with the W word. That's not respect for the Tzelem Elokim. I know that in certain circles it's fashionable, but who says you have to follow fashion? a lot to teach us. I think sometimes getting an outside point of view is a corrective. I think getting a point of view that can... Listen, I mean, do you have any views about how the Pope's views... Do you have any opinions about the Pope's views on abortion? And if not, why not? And if yes, what right do you have to have opinions about it? The answer, of course you have a right to have opinions about it. It's an open world. We live in a free and democratic society. Yes, a non-Jew is not going to paskin a shaila for you in halacha, nor will he be authoritative when it comes to hashkafa. But a point of view, you know, the Rambam says in the Shmona Prakim, in Perek Dalet, I believe it is, he says the following words, which he really takes from the Sefer Ben Sira. Ushema et ha'emet mimisha amaro. You have to hear or learn the truth, no matter who said it. So if a guy said it, or a Jew said it, it makes no difference. The truth is the truth, irrespective of the provenance of the statement, of where it comes from. So if a non-Jew has an opinion, you don't have to accept it because he's a non-Jew and therefore give him special derech eretz, and you don't have to reject it because he's not Jewish. You have to think about what he said. If it's correct, you accept it. If it's not correct, you don't accept it. Why? Who said that statements have to have a certification of origin on it? You don't pay duty on it. The Rambam adapted many great non-Jewish ideas and put it into his hashkafa, into his philosophy, and into the halacha too, because he put it in Hilchos Deis.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, fine.
Okay, that's correct. The question is, I think the question is, how do you explain, what do you do with the Gemara that says, Tosha Begoyim Harog, and Tosha Badofim Begehenim, and Tov, etc., etc.? First of all, my friend and colleague, Lord Emmanuel Jacobowitz, many years ago in his classic work on Jewish medical ethics, the first one really to come out of the modern period, points out that this Chazal, this statement of the Agoda, is simply the Jewish version of something that was universally known. Most people have had the same thing, especially when it comes to doctors. Tov shebadofim legehenim. Have you heard the statement before? You really didn't? How many of you are pre-med majors here? Now you're afraid to admit it, you see? Actually, the story I heard is that a Rav was examined by a doctor. He wasn't feeling well. The doctor examined him. He says, Rabbi, I'm sorry to tell you, you have only 3 months to live. So the rabbi was very upset and said, how dare you play God and tell me how long I have to live? I dismiss from you. You're dismissed from my service at once. 7 years later, the rabbi is walking in the street, and lo and behold, whom does he meet? He meets the doctor. He says, Doctor, Shalom Aleichem, what are you doing in Gan Eden? He says, in Gan Eden, Rabbi? He says, yes, the Gemara says, Tov shebadofim legehenim. Listen, in the Agoda and Chazal, you have many statements that give vent to the deepest emotions of a people who find themselves in a specific circumstance. I must tell you that when I saw only a small segment of the television show about the shtetl, when was it recently? The night before last? My wife called me, you must see this, on channel 13, I believe. Have many of you seen it? And I saw the same pictures that I saw as a youngster coming from the camps with this abysmal, sadistic cruelty that can only make you shudder and vomit at the same time. I said, Tov Shebegoyim Harog. I said, Tov Shebegoyim Harog, you know? And anyone who doesn't say it, I visited the Ukraine three years ago, and I had some contact with the Ukrainians and the Poles, and I said to myself, Tov Shebegoyim Harog. And I step back and take an overall view, more balanced, outside of the particular emotional nexus and the distressing situation, which I found myself, I say, no, it doesn't mean that, it's not meant to be taken literally. Torah says it repeats a statement, it doesn't mean it's a halacha. You're going to find no place in the halacha that says, Tosha Begayim Haram. You won't even find anything that says, Tosha Begayim Legehenim. But it means that Goyim have a very often an inborn hatred for Jews. I believe it, many goyim, and it goes up and it goes down. In some periods, it's universal. Before the Second World War, during the Second World War, even today, damn it. You go to Eastern Europe and even Western Europe, you'll find endemic anti-Semitism. No one can convince me that Austrians are not born hating Jews, even more than Germans. And no one can convince me that Poles and Ukrainians and Lithuanians and Romanians and Estonians and Latvians don't have a tremendous amount of innate anti-Semitism. Not all of them, but most of them. It's there. And there are other periods, let's say America, during the eve of World War II was very anti-Semitic. We were quaking in our boots. You people don't remember because you weren't born then, but read your history books about Father Coughlin in Dearborn, Michigan. And the poison that was being spewed forth in the press and on the radio by Henry Ford and others, it was a very terrifying situation. Today, it's much less than it was before. And you know, I don't know which is the real America. Will the real America please stand up? I don't know. All I know is today I would not say Tovisha Begoyim Li Harog. There are times that I did feel it. It's not a normative statement. You see, it's not a normative statement. It is a psychologically understandable emotional statement.